This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming, to movies, TV shows and pop culture, to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you from Chicago, USA, with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Payne here, live from the MVP Studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. Invin Global Esports reporter Nick Geraci is going to speak with me about Epic Games' reputation and how it changed after the Fortnite World Cup and other esports news. Thanks for joining me, Nick.
Good to be back, Mason.
Fortnite World Cup, it's been a few weeks now, so I wanted to know, before Epic Games had a bit of a problem with paying out people, do you think that's changed now? Do you think, like, going forward, they're going to be doing pretty well?
I think that there were a lot of problems with, and there still are, a lot of problems with Fortnite esports, but hiring Nate Manzer, former Overwatch League commissioner, as kind of their, like, first sort of head of esports was very beneficial in the way that, like, well, we haven't seen a ton of those changes yet. We've already seen a few, and it's good to have someone at the helm who's a little more familiar with, like, competition, right? And I don't think you're going to be seeing the same level of problems affect Fortnite esports, or at the very least, not in the long term, if there have been lingering issues. We already, you know, this might be jumping ahead a bit, we already saw things about the Fortnite World Cup that were different than other Fortnite competitive events that were definitely changes for the better.
Now, do you think going forward all Fortnite tournaments are going to look like this, or do you think this is the only one that's going to be this extravagant?
I don't think they're going to, like, go all out, like, World Cup level for every single event, but I do think that the World Cup is setting a new precedent as far as, the value of the actual competition and potentially, you know, kind of, like, I guess, like, what formats are going to look like what we can expect from Epic Games, you know, before a tournament, which is a lot less surprises, right? So I think the World Cup set a good precedent for what could be, you know, consistently better decisions made by Epic as far as Fortnite esports goes.
Now, I know past conversation that we had, you said that you had very little faith in Epic because of what they did to Gears of War. After seeing the World Cup, did your opinion change at all?
Absolutely, yeah. It seems like they actually listened to their player base, which was nice. Again, not everything was perfect, but nothing's ever going to be completely perfect. I mean, what I did see was that, like, Epic responding, you know, to criticisms directly by addressing them or just completely just solving them altogether through some other type of proactive measure or change, right? So I think that, like I said, there's still work to be done, but I think things are moving in the right direction, and I have more faith in their guiding hand, in Epic's guiding hand, than I have in the past.
Now, changing gears a little bit, I'm not sure what's really going on here. When it comes to Ninja, he signed a deal with, obviously, Microsoft's Mixer. How did this happen? This kind of came out of the blue. Even Twitch didn't seem like they knew what was going on.
The whole reason that this signing happened is because it's like people would be so shocked by it. I think, you know, what I personally think happened was Ninja got offered to stream on Mixer for a lot of money, I would have to guess. You know, I mean, there's been no, like, official release of a contract, but, like, we're talking, like, a lot of money. Like, you know, to abandon, you know, Twitch, which in its own right is a powerhouse, but also is, you know, backed by Amazon, you know, like, there's, you know, and Ninja has such a large following on Twitch, like, to, you know, essentially to sort of leave all that. Yeah, a lot of his, you know, his subscribers, his fans and stuff, his followers, they've gone over, they've converted with him, but that's still a huge risk. So I think there had to be some type of sort of, you know, guarantee of some kind involved, because otherwise it just wouldn't have made enough sense. Any potential reward would not have been worth the risk for Ninja as a streamer, in my opinion.
Now, some people speculate that the reason that Ninja left was because there were other more popular Fortnite streamers. Do you think that's true?
I think that there's, like, validity that obviously there's more competition on Twitch, and by getting on his own platform, then yes, like, you know, hypothetically speaking, he doesn't eliminate competition. But if you think of, like, the amount of users on Twitch compared to the amount of users on Mixer right now, I would say that unless Ninja, you know, in his heart of hearts, truly believes that Mixer will be the next big thing, Ninja having to compete with other people, whether they're more or less or the same amount of popular as him, would still be more viewers in competition than him being alone on this brand new platform, right? Like, Twitch is an institution in gaming and esports at this point. Like, it's the premier streaming platform, and so even if you're competing for users, there's still a lot more to choose from. There's a lot more to go around, right?
I'm a little curious, and if you heard this at all, have you heard if Twitch was paying him to stream, or was he just streaming for free?
I mean, I think that, like, you know, like, if by streaming for free, you mean, like, still making his own money, a lot of donations,
subscriptions, yeah, yeah,
et cetera, right? Sponsorships. Yeah, no, I mean, I think that, you know, Twitch has paid streamers, but usually it's, like, from what I've heard, you know, it's usually to, you know, premiere a new game or something like that, or help, you know, help boost some type of release or something like that. As far as Twitch just paying you to stream on their service, just, like, for being there, I don't think, I've not heard of anything like that.
Okay, so do you think this is going to be a new landscape where people are going to start paying streamers to stream exclusively on their network?
Yes, depends on how, you know, the law evolves to restrict, right? We'll have to see how that goes. But yeah, I do think that this is setting a precedent. I mean, it's like, you know, Mixer just made a huge power move, right? Like, they may be nobody, but now they're immediately, just by default, in competition in some way. Because they forced the conversation. They got Ninja. The conversation's happening, you know? And so I do think that there's, like, validity to that, in the same way there's, like, you know, validity to, like, you know, signing exclusive rights with anything, you know? Anything that's potentially profitable. It's, you know, I think we're going to see this more. We're already seeing Twitch, you know, or pay streamers, or people pay streamers, rather, you know, like you know, to stream a certain game or something like that, or, you know, like I said, help boost the release. So it's like, I think those are, like, the early beginnings of, like, a full-on, like, you know, industry in its own right, or at least a vertical of the current industry in place.
Now, there's a popular streamer. His name is Dr. Disrespect. He actually went on a rant, and it was about how people are not actually happy with the Twitch platform. But I didn't know that there were issues. Do you have any idea?
I mean, it's the kind of thing where, like, there's a couple things, right? Like, I mean, like, first of all, any platform that large without like amount of audience, the diverse amount of users, you know, like there's going to be like, you're not going to make everybody happy. But I know that there's been, you know, there's inconsistency in how Twitch uses their bans for like their partnered streamers and that kind of stuff. And that's been a problem in the past with certain League of Legends streamers and the like. You know, and I would say that also, like, if from a user standpoint, like, the mobile app is just garbage, just from seeing from my personal experience and other things that I've heard. But I think Dr. Disrespect is probably talking more about, like, the streamer experience on Twitch as far as, like, a professional, like, you know, like, good experience might not be up to what they would want. And that does also create, like, you know, like, if there is dissatisfaction there, that does create the potential for things like Mixer to, you know, to move in further, if they can offer better services, or maybe, you know, if not better service, maybe they're offering, you know, like you said, partner deals to be like, hey, we'll pay you, you know, a salary to stream on our, you know, platform. It's still a wide open field, right? Like, this is the wild, wild west right now. So there's plenty of things that can happen. It's going to be exciting to see how it unfolds.
I don't know. Twitch has been around for so long. I mean, it was called Justin TV a long time ago, and then it turned to Twitch. So, I mean, this has been a staple for, like, maybe 10-plus years of this website that would allow people to stream their gameplay. So they have that legacy to it. I could see Microsoft's Mixer being able to dethrone them only because, you know, it's backed by Microsoft. They'll throw bad money on top of, you know, a bottomless pit just until it works.
Right. I think that's what they, you know, like, I think that's what they may have done here is, like, any, like, there's so many potential risks to, like, against Twitch, that, like you said, it's such a legacy platform at this point. Like, it's dominated the space for so long that it's, like, for them to have gotten Ninja to stream exclusively off of Twitch onto their platform, like, there would have had to have been some kind of, you know, money involved in some way, in my opinion.
No, I think you're right. I think big buku bucks, too, because for him to leave Twitch, I mean, that's pretty huge. I mean, most people don't even leave for YouTube. And that's like that's second, I think, to Twitch when it comes to gaming streaming.
Right.
Changing to another game, Overwatch. I've read that they're ending the Korean servers because of rampant cheating. I didn't know you can cheat in Overwatch. What's up with that?
Unfortunately, it's really not a global problem, but there are a lot of, like, hackers currently on the Korean server relative to other servers. Like, it's really not an issue anywhere else in the world, but it is a problem in Korea. You know, and, you know, that can be anything from, like, you know, like, you know, cheating can be match fixing, it can be boosting, it can be, like, actually hacking the game. You know, there's so many different things that can constitute as it. And the thing is, like, while this policy does, like, in a vacuum, kind of makes sense, right? Like, you know, get the cheaters in the game, ruin the game, shit down the game, because Overwatch has such a massive, like, sort of, you know, queue pool. Like, you know, it's 6v6, so you're queuing with 12 players. All it takes is one out of 12 players to be violating any type of thing that the algorithm determines is cheating, you know, which is often accurate, but still, one in 12 players, you know, that's like, you're seeing, like, one third of games just like abruptly ended, you know, due to scandal, basically. It's a really big issue, especially because, you know, certain aspects of it, you know, actually violate actual laws. Like, you know, like forget like penalties in Overwatch. Like they actually violate like laws in South Korea.
They have laws like anti-gaming cheating laws.
Yeah, it's an anti-cheating, anti-boost actual like law policies went into effect over the last few years, and it's like very, you know, it's like, and that's why it's been so culturally looked down upon for years. In the Overwatch League, when the Dallas Fuel main tank OGE first signed with the team, Fissure, who was in the league at the time, was very, I wouldn't say rude to him, but was very like unaccepting of him at first until he publicly apologized for, you know, getting paid to boost people's accounts like a year back or so. Because it's very, very culturally frowned upon, and now it is literally illegal in certain instances.
Okay, just to clarify, boosting is when you level up someone's character, right?
So it's like you level up someone else's account, or like okay. Maybe like you're kind of like, you know, you're rigging the system with somebody and queuing at the same time so you can get like match fixing, win trading, you know, like there's a lot of different ways. But anyway, you're kind of manipulating the game or the ladder, right?
Okay, so I see that a lot on American servers. How come we don't shut our servers down?
I don't play enough Overwatch right now to really, you know, confirm or deny or, like, really have a full opinion on our servers, but I think that it's not as widespread of a problem as it is in Korea, so I think there are, like, other instances of it. Overwatch usually does a decent job of catching people, so I think it's, like, it's only because it's become such a rampant problem in South Korea that it's, like, you know, it's being made its own separate issue. You know, it is so common there relative to the other, to here, to Europe, to even China, so... It's almost like it's an entirely separate issue because of how rampant it is.
Wow. No, it must really be bad because, you know, in an average game, you may have like, I don't know, maybe once a week, you'll think to yourself, is this person boosting? Like something doesn't seem right, right? It happens maybe once a week. For a company to sit there and say, we're going to shut the servers down because it's that bad, it must be like every other match. That's nuts.
Yeah, and, you know, like, part of it is also, like, you know, culturally over there. Like, if you're good on the ladder, you'll probably get signed by a team in Korea. Like, it's very much, like, the way to go pro there. And so someone's manipulating that. That's, like, I mean, it's the equivalent of, like, you know, like a baseball player using performance-enhancing drugs kind of in a way, right? Like, that's how serious it is to them over there because of how the culture and how the infrastructure of esports works in South Korea. So that's the reason for the severity around the situation as well.
A few weeks ago, I read that Blizzard investors, they wanted Disney to purchase Activision Blizzard because of their concurrent financial losses. But I also read that Overwatch players have spent $1 billion in-game so far. So why would they want to sell the company? I mean, I can't imagine having $1 billion that they would still have financial difficulties. Like, what's happening here?
It's a very complicated situation. Activision, now, like, you know, paired with Blizzard in a way, like, has kind of historically made these types of, you know, they make comebacks, they want to continue profiting, and I think that Disney is also becoming like they're becoming a big player in esports more than they already are. You know, they're already kind of involved with, like, with Team Liquid. They have a Marvel partnership with them now, as well as the San Francisco Shock in the Overwatch League. And I think it's like we're seeing a lot of game companies just kind of getting like squeezed. Like, there's not a lot of people making, you know, as much money. Like, yes, like that's quite a lot of money. But Activision Blizzard is a huge company. There's their hands in multiple different things in the gaming industry. Like $1 billion is a lot of money. But it's, you know, that's the kind of stuff they play with all the time, right? So I think that you know, there's a lot of different companies feeling the squeeze right now, and everybody falls into that. It's just a matter of how much people are willing to risk. You know, and a Disney buyout would eliminate that kind of risk because of, you know, the backing that they have. And they're an interested player in trying to get into esports.
Now, when I first read that, I thought to myself, they're probably just wanting Disney's money only because they threw so much on that Fox merger. I'm like, they're like, they must have some change laying around to buy up Blizzard Activision.
Oh, yeah, sure. No, that's a good point.
Now, when it comes to League of Legends, which is still my favorite game, and I'm nuts about this new WeWork. It's Pathian. Have you seen it yet?
Yeah, I actually took a look at it when it was first announced last week. It's good. First of all, visually, it looks much better. Like, the core value of the kit, I think, really does remain intact. The only really massive change in ability is how the ultimate works, where, you know, Grand Skyfall is like a semi-global ultimate that he just drops from the sky, right? You know, but Grand Starfall is more of like a, it's not quite as rangy, but it's a more potential, you know, engageability where you kind of like go up into the air, almost like kind of like Galio does for his ultimate, and you kind of sweep across like a potential team fight. And I think it's going to allow Pantheon to have a lot more impact in ways that aren't like as binary, because in the way Pantheon is just right now, he's very much like a feature famine champion. He either, you know, is going to get far ahead early because his early game is insane. He's, you know, incredible base stats. His block is so good for early game trades. Like, he has the highest base movement speed in the game. You know, so he's like one of the best level 1, level 2, level 3 champions out there. But if he fails to get going in that time period, in that very, very early power spike of his, where he has the advantage on most champions, not all of them, you know, he becomes very useless when he falls off. And part of that is that he doesn't have like a lot of, you know, team CC. He can jump on one person and stun them. He can ult, right? But like, you know, if he's behind, that's not really going to be much of a threat if he's coming at you. So Grand Starfall gives him kind of this ability to have like a really, really reliable engage tool. You know, maybe you see some people just like forego the damage and just play some tank Pantheon. You know, there's a lot of different things that are interesting about how like just a small change to this kit can actually like increase his viability in multiple ways as a champion and make him a little bit, like I said, less binary in terms of how feast or famine he is.
Yeah, I'm really excited about him because the way he played now is more like a sniper, where he'll jump from a bush and just down you as fast as possible. And in this case, there's going to be a little bit more utility to him, and I think that's going to be great for just the life of that character. Now, are there any other buffs or nerfs that we should be on the lookout for in the upcoming patch?
There's nothing else really going on right now. I mean, that Pantheon everybody's talking about is coming out in patch 9.16. That's kind of the main thing. No, nothing really aside from that.
Okay, so I have to ask you one more thing. The Teemo rework, was that just an April Fool's joke? Because they never talked about it ever again after that.
It's hard to say, right? They haven't spoken about it, so it could have been. I mean, it is Teemo. It's hard to say if it was serious. But if it wasn't serious, then, you know, haha, they got us. But there's also a chance that, you know, like I said, this is a very difficult champion to balance and a difficult champion to, like, kind of reconfigure, you know, especially because you don't want to, like, make him too, you know, serious. A lot of leagues, more kind of goofy earlier champions have been kind of changed. Gangplank used to be a lot more kind of, you know, piratey, like, you know. There's a lot of things like that are leaving the game. Some are for better, some are for worse, but I don't think they want to give Teemo kind of the same treatment they've given everybody else, because I don't think that would work. It would take itself a little too serious. And so they might be having hesitations around that, you know, or maybe you're right. Maybe it was entirely an April Fool's joke and it's not going to happen at all. But there is a chance, I think, that it still is in planning or still is in development. It might, you know, some things take longer than others, and then they get stumped on development and work on something else. There's a multitude of explanations for what could have happened.
Well, Nick, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate you being here. For those listening, where can they find more information about you?
Well, thanks for having me. It's always good to speak to you about this stuff. You can find me on Twitter at Nick Geraci, or they can head over to nvenglobal.com, where me and a lot of my colleagues make great esports and gaming content for different kinds of games and people in the industry.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Head to WGNradio.com for exclusive content by Mason. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter @MasonVeraPayne, that's all one word, and don't forget to share the show with your friends.